This week on RSBNB Update, mobile interface changes arrive courtesy of the ninjas. RuneScape Kingdom Shadow of Elvarg arrives later this year as RuneScape's first foray into tabletop games. We then unpack what's happening with the RuneScape economy and the shutdown of Sudibot. This is RSBNB Update, episode 879, recorded Thursday, April 29th, 2022. Sudi Economics. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of RSBNB Update. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week to discuss the Mobile Ninja Strike and some community economic news is Earth. Welcome aboard again.
Welcome aboard again.
Yeah, we last heard from you on our Extinction episode.
Mm-hmm. In which I made Mod Jack cry.
Yeah, there was a fun little meme about that, wasn't there? That he posted in Clan Quest. So, all sorts of fun things happen here at RSBNB Update. But if you're joining us for the first time, RSBNB Update is the RuneScape podcast that covers the week-to-week RS news, amongst other things, community going on. Boy, that's a mouthful to say. But nonetheless, I am Shane12088. You can find Tanis in game at Tanis79, and Earth is at Lord Earth, who has the wonderful title of the Divine. Lord Earth, the Divine.
I'm the Rock now.
Oh, the Rock. Damn it,
it's about
drive.
It's about power.
I didn't get that on Easter. I mean, April 1st, sorry.
That's you too bad. A fool.
Too bad. But nonetheless, if you want to follow along, we have full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. We'll be discussing, starting off, with the Mobile Ninja Strike, a number of changes made to the mobile game client this week, and it was a little bit surprising for me to see this, I think, because normally we don't have Ninja Strikes done by mobile updates done by the Ninja team, but lo and behold, here we are, a major change to the mobile UI with this. So, gathering some early feedback, rather than you guys able to have a quick look at what this looked like going in.
I did. I tried it both on my phone, iPhone 13 Pro Max, so the biggest screen, and on an iPad 2019
mm-hmm.
version.
And how did it go on those?
I mean, I don't play mobile that much, so I didn't really notice a difference, but it seemed good. I liked the bank, which was one of the key points.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. We'll get there. So starting off.
And I think that was something that in the past I had complained to you quite a bit about.
Yeah. So starting off, the right-hand menu at the side is fixed and can no longer be customized. So now you have your backpack, worn equipments, stats, ability book, magic book, prayers, summoning familiar, and then the drop list with that. And windows, including the backpack interface, have been reduced in size to use up less screen space, and their contents, like the backpack icons themselves, have also been reduced in size slightly. Previously, we had the rounded icons about where the items would sit. Now, you just have a basic square-by-square grid, as you would expect on the desktop client with that. And if you were on a smaller device before, you would get a scroll bar on the inventory like that.
I seem to remember that.
Yeah. Yep. So that's good that's been fixed. Another thing in terms of scroll bars that was changed is that I know we used to have this problem that we talked about of having scroll bars in the bank. And I was asking around, and I think you were the one that had this, and I definitely had this, but now there's no longer a scroll bar in the bank inventory, which is wonderful, I think. It just feels like it's a more immersive experience with that.
Yes, mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing I noticed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I got a huge screen with my phone, so God well, forbid and, the iPad.
And there, it just feels like there's less scrolling all around in a lot of menus. Mm-hmm. Like I've been used to using, you know, the superheat item spell, and used to have to like scroll to get to that. And it's like right there now. It's under another tab within yeah. the magic tab. It's yeah, I thought it was pretty nice actually.
Yeah.
What are you using the superheat item?
More on that to come, but smithing. So okay. you can do uninterrupted smithing.
Interesting. All right.
And, you know, it's actually interesting that they have, because on desktop you have the magic ability book, and then the sub book has, you know, the spells and teleports, skilling spells, and so on, but those are actually split out, and I think that's a good thing to do here. It actually makes a lot of sense from the UI standpoint. Kind of would be nice to have something like this on desktop, thinking about it, just splitting that out, but I guess that's up to us to make that preset. Updated border added to right-hand child windows and the mini-map. And I guess that's what we were just talking about, is that I didn't actually look really closely, but you can actually see that there's a different border on all those right-hand items that wasn't there before, so that's good. They also added header access to the desktop's footer icons, and what this means is that you can now access things like your currency pouch and whatnot easier from your inventory, which is good, because previously you used to actually have to go into the worn equipment's menu and scroll down on that to make those changes. So this is just adding more consistency with what you would expect on the desktop. That's good. They added a footer to each child window displaying the single most prominent button and an info display, so currency pouch and coins with this. And this actually had the side effect of updating the font on the desktop for the currency pouch as well. I know a number of people pointed that out to me.
It's the first thing I noticed when I logged.
Leave it to RS players to notice subtle changes in font, right?
Yeah.
One moved my cheese.
Next up is the hard-coded tab support that we mentioned that you can see in the abilities book. They also updated the icon for the prayer book to make it match closer to the desktop icon instead of a book, to avoid confusion between the three existing book icons that were there. So that's good. And the icons for summoning and prayer point displays have been improved, indicating more clearly which is which. And this is, of course, talking down in the bottom corner of the screen about the ribbon.
Yep, I had this issue. I was getting them mixed up a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I wasn't hitting my elven ritual shard like when I should have been, because I kept looking down, seeing the summoning points. So I'm like, oh, I'm good.
Oh, okay.
Huh, I haven't been going down at all. That's weird. But, you know, it's the quick glance anyway. I'm not like trying to stare at it. So, yeah, that was another good improvement.
Right. Also, a new setting has been added in gameplay settings, interfaces, and UI customization to make right-hand combat buttons always visible, which when you...
Yes.
Which is interesting, because I guess you'd have to go into combat to see that. Right, and then with that, you get the scroll mm-hmm. bar. Then you have a really, really tiny interface window looking at it right now. I see that. Now, for people on YouTube, I just had that up on the screen, and I'm actually going to turn that off right now to show what that looks like.
Menus used to cover up the,
right.
you know, the bar, like right?
Now, if it's off, if you have one of the menus up, you won't have that right-handed combat button. So I think this actually makes more sense now, in that you can choose to either have the flyout panel open, or you can choose to always have that right-handed combat button available to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do combat on the phone, so I think it's going to stay off for me. I think that's what I'm going to do with that. And they say taller screens such as tablets will display the right-hand buttons and a full-size window if there's enough space, regardless of this setting. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And I know when we were talking about whether or not RS Mobile would have a specific tablet UI for it, well, here we are. We're starting to see these kind of things take into consideration about when something should be a tablet setting and when something should be a phone setting. And they're just determining that on the fly based on the device. So that's good. So, wonderful. A long press option has been added to the chat modes button. This will provide quick access for switching between chat modes without needing to access the chat settings interface. All right. And the loot window has been moved from the center of the screen now towards the top left. And if you open the chat panel, this will close the loot window. And opening the loot window while the chat panel is open will allow both to be open together. I think we got a win-win here, folks.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
And then just for some cross-platform changes, they also updated the red font used in warning messages and made it a slightly lighter color as the darkness contrasted poorly with the game world. And the worn interface aura slot now has a graphic indicating its access settings when an aura is not active.
Okay, but are we going to talk about the most controversial change?
What's that?
They swapped the spot of aura and tool belt in the equipment page at the bottom.
On the desktop?
Did you not notice? On the desktop.
No, I didn't notice that because to activate an aura, what I typically do is I just right-click on the aura slot next to my head item.
Well, I think you may be the only one. It's pretty controversial, man.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Says who?
The internet.
Oh, okay.
Well, there's a problem. Can never believe the internet. yeah, I'm just now looking at that. That's they did, but I mean, it's still right there. It's not. I mean, it's still
I
right
look
there.
At my
it's
tool just, belt all the time, Tennis.
But it's just on the other. I mean, it's just right there. Huh.
All right. Now I have a question for you based on this next one. The notes interface has improved with the desktop window now resizing correctly and both platforms having backgrounds for each entry. How do you access the notes feature on mobile?
Ooh, wait, hold up. People use that?
Yes. I use it to keep track of when I need to go to my kingdom. I use it to keep track of what my max herb run yield is.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Never used it.
Music? Audio? I don't know where to access notes on mobile. That's interesting. Huh. Huh. Social? High scores? I don't know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's in the social menu.
That's a place for it.
Yeah, except I don't know how to actually get it out into a wider window, but this is what it looks like on mobile right now. Kingdom 1 hasn't been used. My last time going to Tears of Guthix was apparently on a November 30th with a max of 205 tiers. Max Herbs, 150 on November 13th, 2019. FYI. But, okay. I'll have to look and see how that looks on the desktop, the notes system. But, yeah. Also, fun fact, if you type things into the notes window, specific keywords, it will auto-populate it. I think one of the ones you could put something in, like Andrew Gower or something, and it would populate with some funny fact. So just a thing on the notes system if anybody was unaware of that. Some general improvements include drag responsiveness being improved.
Andrew and Cabbage.
Oh, Andrew and Cabbage, right.
Mm-hmm.
And the mouse over highlight when dragging an item in the inventory is now also available on mobile. So that and drag responsiveness, the general changes that were made to the UI this week. So overall, you know, we're, can you guys believe it? We're approaching a year since the launch of mobile last June.
I mean, it seems longer because we've had it, you know, longer.
Yeah. But the mass launch was a year ago. And I think it's definitely filled that niche of just, you know, allowing you to do those quick little things when you don't necessarily want to log on to the desktop. And one of the things that everybody always talks about of places where they wind up using it a lot is actually on tablet, believe it or not. So mobile, I think, has had a good time over the year, and it's always good to see changes like this coming into play. But we got just some general patch notes left to go before we move on. For the Easter event, remove the catch success animation for the giant Gothixian butterfly that can appear to help with performance on highly populated worlds. For the Elder God Wars, it's now possible to return to the Saren dialogue before Phase 3 of the Extinction Quest. And fixed overlapping sections of the player-owned farm notice board interface, among other things.
Did notice that the other day.
Then, players will no longer be told that they can cannot play Treasure Hunter when leaving an active Dungeoneering dungeon.
Like, we'll never tell you you can't play Treasure Hunter. Never, ever.
Zuck's immune hit mark now shows in the correct language when using a non-English client.
Okay.
Fixed an issue where the Super Glass Make spell was requiring the As a First Resort quest rather than the Dream Mentor quest to be unlocked. That's different ends of the world there. And the Aura Management interface will no longer direct you to buy auras from the Loyalty Store when they're only available from War's Retreat. Yes. Boom. Patch notes for the week. I think that we had some good changes in there, specifically on the mobile side. I can get behind that.
Yeah, there's a few. There's a few on the mobile side that was pretty good.
Yeah. All right. What do you guys want to do next? You want to do the community news or the board game news?
Let's. You want to just clear the board and
so community.
Yeah. Well, I think we may have a little more to say when it comes to the community stuff.
All right, so let's clear the board then and do the board game right now. Oh God, that's oh my God, Mac OS. I just did something bad with Mac OS. I pressed buttons I shouldn't have pressed. Okay, we're good. We're good here. Folks are seeing me try and jungle this thing here, doing it live. Jungle jumbo.
Jungle it, Shane. I'm not sure what you're trying to tell us here, but...
All right. RuneScape Kingdoms, the Shadow of Elvarg board game has been announced, and we talked about this. Was this at the tail end of last year or early this year? It seems like it was a while ago that we talked about this.
I remember we mentioned it, but... I mean, I think it was this year, wasn't it?
Yeah. And this is the board game, because, of course, there was the board game and then the tabletop RPG, right? So this is a board game aimed for 1 to 5 players, emphasis on 1 to 5. With this, it's going to be using a fast travel map, jumping from region to region as you level up skills and complete quests. They say you'll be able to zoom in for face-to-face encounters with iconic bosses that become even tougher as you work your way towards the final quest. You'll apparently get to choose what skills you max, which weapons you craft, and even where to explore next. You'll be able to go all throughout Geonor sampling every side quest on the way, while still keeping your eyes on the main prize and cutting a straight path through the campaigns to take on the challenging boss fights, where each group member will be able to play their own way, maxing up certain skills to earn those all-important capes. And they say experienced scapers will recognize iconic moments and sneaky references to their favorite video game. while total noobs will be enthralled by the whole wide world of Gielinor and all the adventures they get to experience on their own terms. And with this, they have a number of miniatures as well that they're going to be unveiling for this. They've unveiled the Elvarg miniature as well as the Knight, amongst others. What are you thinking, both of you? Would you sign up to play this board game? Or are you not board game people?
Thinking I might have figured out a way that I can do PVM.
I mean, it's one of those things I'd buy to put on a shelf, but not to actually play, I think. But I've been surprised before.
What have you been surprised with?
Surprising things.
Okay, fair.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
I mean, it looks neat. I mean, but I'm also not, like, the biggest board game person in the world.
Nor am I.
Yeah, and I don't really play them at all, except for, like, with my daughter and stuff. And she's even starting to grow out of it because, you know, we got video games.
Yeah, but I think RS players and people who love board games, there's a lot of overlap there.
Yeah, and it sounds like I was very, I didn't know how they were going to capture RS in a board game, but from that description, it sounds like they may have done it.
Yeah, and you know, for what it's worth, we don't have any pictures yet of how it's going to look, like the actual board itself. We just have the miniatures and such. There is a Kickstarter page where you can go there and you can notify on launch if you want to do that. And it's interesting to me because I thought Kickstarters were normally for projects that lacked funding, but Steamforge Games is a established company. Can established companies use Kickstarter to drive hype and build towards a launch?
I wouldn't have thought ethically, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. That was the question I had with this, but maybe we need to get together a group of people at the next gathering that happens and play this game and videotape it. I'm sure someone will do that.
Next time there's a RuneFest, gotta have the board game.
Yeah, buy the board game at the merch stand, right?
Yeah.
Just like everybody buys all their favorite mouse pads and such at the RuneFest merch stand. So
yeah, and I'm like Earth. I would probably buy it
just to have
to have it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And they say coming 2022, and you know, there's about 8 months left in the year. So, based on this, what are we thinking? Holiday release, probably.
I mean, probably.
Yeah.
And you know, I bet the most iconic quest that came up in the survey that we all did on this was Dragon Slayer, hence why they're calling it Kingdom of Elvarg.
Mm-hmm. So, that was the first thing that recognized that.
And yeah. And you know what's also really interesting? If you look at the miniatures, specifically the Knight and the Wizard, they're in the old style format how their models and armor used to look. Specifically, the Knight is wearing
the kite shield,
the old kite shield and the old scimitar.
That was the first thing I noticed.
Even all the old helmets and such. Who knows? Maybe RS3 needs to go back to that for the metal armors, that kind of style.
Oh, it's OS, the board game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just said something Dragon that Slayer. A lot of people haven't picked up on yet.
Yeah. Wait till they do.
But at the same time, doesn't matter. I mean, this is all the shared history we have between the game, right?
Yeah. So I think, and obviously it makes sense to do the miniatures in simplistic kind of form, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And looking further into the blog from Steamforged Games on this, They say it isn't about a complex strategy game. Instead, it's going to be focusing on rich narrative quests and lighthearted distractions. Which nice. Sounds 100% like RS, right? And they're calling it RuneScape Kingdoms because they say, quote, it was really important for us for the board game to appeal to scapers of all kinds, and it's heavily inspired by content and references from both RuneScape and old school RuneScape that will be familiar to players past and present. And to get new scapers into the game. You guys think
that was the only part that kind of threw me off a little bit, because I was expecting like kingdoms like, you know, Varrock and
right
are doing, you know what I mean? So, and it, from what you described, I didn't hear anything about that, so I'm not
well that,
I'm not
that's
sure.
What they say, touching on this exact point, they couldn't pack every kingdom into it. They wanted a game that was going to be accessible and entertaining, but they haven't even begun talking about expansions yet.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. That's where you're going to work everything else in.
So board games have expansions now.
Yes. Yeah.
DLC for board games.
Yeah, like Catan.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
Catan is one of my favorite board games. One of the few I'll play.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, Settlers of Catan. Good game. Good game. You just have to have teammates that'll actually take you seriously, though. But nonetheless. Yeah, there's a story here that we're not going to go into right now. Overall, I guess this is something we'll all be adding to our Christmas list then this year. So, good. All right. We're going to move on to some wider community news that we were alluding to with this. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode. Because without you guys, this would not be possible. So this week in particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Duramax, Hello Matey, Plaza Man, Free Milk, Jacob R., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G, Patty the Architect, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Seth W, Stub Eve, Tabby, Taylor B, The Naked Captain, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody. This truly means the world to us here at RSB&B Update, allowing us to do what we've been doing. And this weekend, we're hosting our round table. By the time you're listening to this, it'll probably be out and available to listen to after the fact. That's where we get together on the Discord and talk for about an hour or so, just about anything RuneScape-related, anything that's on the minds of the people that show up, and just have a nice general discussion, kind of like an all-hands sort of thing. But we also have the Monthly Bits, which is our collection of monthly bonus shows that go back over 2 years at this point. And with this, we're going to be doing one in the next couple weeks here, talking about legacy combat in RuneScape, which that was a little bit surprising to see the poll run away with, wasn't it, Tanis? Upwards of 70%+ of people voting for that.
Shocked me. It made me question my belief system a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, that's why we're going to have that discussion, I guess. And, anybody who subscribes for as little as $1 a month gets access to that show. And the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the option to join us for the roundtable monthly, all for as little as $1 a month. And I think that's really good value. But we also do have a $3 a month package where you get a special VIP rank on the Discord and I mentioned on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high quality stereo versions of the podcast in addition to everything else. And we also have our insider tier for $5 a month where you'll get a shout out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, and I have seen the project, the mail out that's going to be happening at the start of May. It's looking really wonderful. So if you want to get one of these, just sign up for Patreon by April 30th. Make sure you include your shipping info, and you'll be included on that list to get a nice thank you mail out from us. And, you know, with that, there's just that mystical $500 a month tier, the Hot Ones Challenge. Tanis, myself, and maybe a few others will subject our taste buds to a range of spice. And no, Earth won't be joining us for that. I've already asked him if he would be interested in joining for that. And you said no to that one really quick, didn't you?
Correct.
Yeah. So.
Now, if we hit 1,000 a month and I get to see some of that, then we'll talk.
Okay. I was actually thinking of having you along for that one as the moderator to ask the questions, because
that's even better.
Because being called the Hot Ones Challenge, there needs to be the hot questions to ask.
Yeah. Oh, that's the perfect role for me.
It really is, isn't it?
I get to grill you normally, so, you know.
And maybe we can
now
get
I can
you
put
to
the
do-
heat on yeah. in a couple different ways. All right, I'm in. So you heard the man.
Well, there we go. We're currently pushing towards that mystical 500 tier. We're currently at 235. So if you want to see us get there we go. But with that being said, I don't know that we know what we signed up for, Tanis. I think I'll be able to handle it myself. We'll see who else we can get on board for that. So,
yeah, no, it's gonna hurt, but I mean, here we are.
And isn't the thing that sometimes the questions hurt more than the spice?
No, not at all. not in any way.
All right, moving on then. Have you guys ever heard of something called Sudibot?
Not until you told me.
It's in our RSBNB Discord server.
It is in the RSBNB Discord server. It is.
Did you like that plug?
I did. RSBNB.com/Discord. That's the one extra bit I'll add on to it. So, for those unaware, Sudibot provides a range of services to the RuneScape community, but what it has become most known for over time is being used as a tool to price check items that might be on the Grand Exchange but might have an erroneous Grand Exchange value in that you don't know how much they're actually going for. Or it's also used to track items that are worth more than the actual Grand Exchange value is able to track, because, you know, we have such items in the game like the Staff of Armadil and various rares like the party hats and the Santa hats that are worth more than 2.1 bill. So with that, that's what one of the things that Sudibot was used for. Now, the bot was shut down earlier in the week because of a backlash that the community hoist onto the folks who make Sudibot, which is really unfortunate. I'm going to start by reading the statement from Sudi themselves. So, the intent of the price-checking module has failed to meet the desired result, and for that I apologize. What started out as a great tool has become something I hate working on. I tried to implement numerous measures to combat price manipulation, but every measure dissuades regular players, who this tool was built for, from contributing their prices. It seems that merchers and those with malicious intent will jump through all of the measures I throw at them, even during the time where only video recorded submissions were allowed, resulting in no regular player bothering to submit a price. I do appreciate all the love and kind words everybody has sent, but I do not see myself continuing unless something drastic is implemented. And this was resulting in the entire bot being shut down on midweek this week. But since then, it's been brought back with some Grand Exchange functionality, which I'll talk about right now in an addendum to the statement. So the statement continues, as per my previous announcement, the price checking module was disabled while acceptable measures were considered. After extensive discussion with many players in the suggestions channel, it seems that the overwhelming response is to enable price checking for items in the Grand Exchange only, while potential solutions for items above max cash are brainstormed. At this stage, I am still uncertain whether an acceptable solution exists for items above max cash. And this was a statement written by Sudi that was put out to the Price Check Discord. Okay. So, let's separate this out into two things then. Price checking down on items below 2.1 bill and price checking down on items above 2.1 bill. Now, the problem is that rare items recently have shot upwards in value over the last month or so to the point where certain items have gained 20 billion plus worth in value, seemingly out of nowhere. And with this, parts of the community took this price increase out on the creators of Sudibot, which many people use for the checking of these rare items, rather than directing their anger at the root of the problem with this. And, you know, we've run community-run features here before at RSB. And every time we do something to that, and even this podcast falls into that category, we're doing this as a service to the community because we like the game we play. And from a community management perspective, it's never nice to see when vast swaths of the community are targeting their anger at one specific community person in general. That really does take all the fun out of it. So I highly empathize with Sudi on this.
Well, it doesn't help that they're completely wrong on top of it.
What do you mean?
I mean, when you grab your pitchfork and your torch, you better damn sure make you get to the right house.
To the right target. Yeah. And I have an idea of where this is going with this, but I know you said something, Earth. Did you want to jump in on that, or do you want me to continue on to the next part?
I'll let you continue with the exposition here.
So the bigger problem is that the prices on these rare items in question and expensive items in general have gone up either through inflation or price manipulation. Measuring inflation can be done on a market whole by looking at the common items on the GE that are trackable, but for items that are not trackable or have mismarked GE values or are manipulated, this would create a false measure of inflation. And the best measure of tracking inflation and determining if these rare items are being manipulated is through a data analytics side, measuring GP that changes hands, spirit shards, and items that are traded, then making an assertion based on that. But us as community members and players, we don't have access to that. So a question on that side of the equation would have to come down to Jagex. That being said, Sudi did clarify in postings made in their official Discord that there were multiple private messages received from merchanters claiming victory and looking forward to manipulating prices going forward. People sent messages in thanks for that. And this confirms that a whole... And this confirms that a lot of the price movements we see at higher tiers of the economy could potentially be caused by a group or a cabal controlling prices of the rare item market. And when you split this all out, this is an issue that should really be addressed by Jagex. In particular, the question needs to be asked is whether or not the game's economy should allow for this kind of control and price manipulation by such a huge sector if it's indeed happening. And I think that's where we leave the analysis and start debating reality.
Well, I mean, isn't that like asking, does OPEC manipulate the price of oil?
Yes. That was the comparison I was
Well, whenever you're talking about a cartel, right?
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like to me.
And there was this big thought with Elder God Wars and the influx of people PVMing and all the salvage and such coming into the game over the last year or so since we started with Rex Matriarchs and then moved through the four fronts, there was thought that this was just a natural increase going forward with the amount of GP coming in terms of salvage, then being alked, and then adding that GP to the economy. Because let's be real here, you can go to somewhere like Karapak or even the Archglacier and get tons and tons of Orichalcum salvage that alks for millions of GP out of a single Reaper task. So
I can go to the Abyssal Demons and sit there for 20 minutes, and I look at my coin pouch, and I've got 10, or I've got 1 mil, or 2 mil.
Yeah,
and I don't know why.
Well, that's Spring Cleaner and Gold Accumulator.
No, I know why, but...
Okay, fair.
It was...
I get it. And this raises a question, is that, and we don't have an answer on this, and this is something that I think we need an answer from on Jagex, on their part. Are the price increases we've seen over the last year due to inflation and just the way the economy is going? Or are there people on the high end in the rare market pushing those up, which is bringing everything else up with it throughout the rest of the economy?
Well, but it's not separated out like that. Like, what Earth is saying, that's true, but that doesn't mean that the rare market isn't being manipulated. That doesn't mean that, like, so say there was a certain percentage of inflation when it comes to the money coming in. It's a much higher percentage, I'm betting, that they've raised the price of rares because of the cartel manipulating prices.
Yeah. I mean, the price of rares does not affect the overwhelming majority of players.
No, it doesn't. But it can have rippling effects when it comes to in terms of how much people are willing to sell things for to try and push towards those rares. Because if you talk to, you know, people who do the 24-49 streaks at Telos and such, and other forms of high-octane PVM, they're doing that in order to try and push and chase into that rare market. At least that's some of the things that I've heard, that sometimes that's what people do. So I'm thinking it could have an impact on that, but at the end of the day, when you start spilling all this out, there needs to be a question of how much of this is GP coming into the game and how much of it is price manipulation. And if it's a majority price manipulation, is Jagex okay with that? Is that what they want in the economy?
So, what makes you think that there's inflation in any other part of the market except for rares?
I don't have an answer as to whether or not inflation exists in the current RS economy. I don't have the data to
provide that. I'm not super convinced on that. I mean,
like I said, I don't have the data to track that. I mean, we would need more trade volumes than we're given on the GE.
Yeah, but you take a look at the staples. You build the what's it called?
You build a price index.
Price, yeah, the price basket.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at stuff like food. Rocktails are like 2K, 2.4K each. That's what it's been for a while. Sharks, somehow after 20 years, are still 1K each. And I mean, rune prices have changed, but you can blame that on like Animate Dead and
Magic Meta.
All of that. So soul runes and a couple of the elemental runes have shot up, but I mean, that's because of an increase in demand, not a decrease in the value of an individual gold piece.
Right,
the buying power.
Right. And in general, you can still get inflation through increases in demand with that, and then that can ripple on through the GP side of things. But
well, but isn't that just that's just a price raise, right?
It literally is
supply and demand. That's not inflation.
It is over time. If the price went up, and if it used to be 100 GP and now it's 290 GP.
But if there's 200 more people that want that item, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
That's still inflation, though, at the end of the day. One of the ways you can measure inflation is by the amount of demand that a specific basket of items or a specific item is being pulled on. And if it's being pulled on
more,
the price is higher.
Entirely disingenuous to claim that that's the same, though, because a new use for the item has been discovered. It's trying to think of a good comparison.
Well, I mean, there's It added more intrinsic value to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's entirely true. But maybe, but all inflation is at the end of the day a measurement between X and Y of how much something has gone up. So you can still technically have inflation even if the demand has added new uses that cause that price to go up. What you're probably thinking of is the idea behind GP inflation of just adding certain amounts of GP to the economy, which, as we said, is a question that can't be answered. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, the supply and demand questions of the push and pull of the economy does have an impact on everything that is involved in the prices that do eventually go up or down in some cases.
Well, I think you just said something that's important, because I think in general, when you hear the word inflation, you think of it as a money,
exactly,
a GP issue, yeah, right? I don't think most people would even think about it as a basket of goods.
Exactly.
Like that.
And that's the important thing that when I hear inflation, that I think about it, it's not just necessarily a monetary problem with the amount of GP. It's a question of what's happening with the economy and certain groups of items as a whole. And they can be influenced by supply and demand. And once again, this is highlighting a very complicated topic that cannot necessarily easily be distilled. And I know last time Timbo was on stream, which has been a long time ago, they need to have another live stream with him. Those are always fun. But when Timbo was last on, he said that he was actually working with economists that they had hired to look into the economy and figure out what was happening on this. But as with everything in terms of how all this goes, they're not actually able to say anything until they're ready to act, because it could potentially have side effects.
Sell wands.
Right? And that's exactly it. And
you know, I really do think that the increase in the price of rares is purely manipulation.
Yeah, I'm willing to, if I had to put a guess out, I would say that that's purely manipulation. As for the price of combat supplies like runes, fish, armor, equipment and whatnot, the bulk of it, I would say, comes down to just increased demand with the Elder God War stuff. And the new uses
and
for it.
PVM in general, right? Yeah. I mean, it's pretty arguable that is the dominant thing.
So I'm looking at the price for Rocktail on RSBNB's Grand Exchange portfolio, and it has the price history for the last 4,597 days. So, on release, Rocktails in 2009 were 1,789, and they leveled out, I mean, you know, averaging over a while, scrolling through here, the up and down, but about 2K. And then for about a year, they spiked up to a max of 6,000 each. That was right after the pandemic hit. So I'm wondering. So that's another side interesting study, the effects of the pandemic on the RuneScape economy. But all of that is to say, right now, the price of a Rocktail is 2,059 GP. So 13 years later, it's still the same price.
Possibly better than the real world.
Yeah, and I mean, let's look at.
Oh, I know why they
random items.
I know why the Rocktail started spiking in early 2020.
Sharks did the same thing.
Oh, sharks did the same thing
up to 3,000. Okay, yeah, sharks are still about 1K each.
Power Burst of Vitality came out at the tail end of 2019, and those use Rocktail. But if sharks are doing the same thing, then you have to expand the field on that. And the only things that drop Rocktail in meaningful numbers are Araxi, Nex AOD, and the QBD.
Yeah.
That's an interesting side effect. And this is a good example. I'm glad you brought that up, because when you start splitting all this out, it really just shows that you can't just look at one aspect of it. You got to take the whole of economy approach with this. And we can look and we can see that rocktails spiked up. But you said sharks also did something similar. So say so pointing it just to the power burst of vitality would be a bad thing to say. So in essence, then there's something else happening.
Is if anyone is in like an MBA program somewhere and they need an idea for their master's thesis in economics,
the RuneScape economy.
I got a great idea for you.
The RuneScape economy.
Seek me out.
I would love to do something like that.
I don't think we can adequately cover it in anything less than a doctoral thesis.
You know,
but it's a very complex issue that, you know, we can spitball it here, but
exactly. And you touched on the key point with that, is that there's so many people who will say it's X, Y, or Z, right?
I don't know many people who would say X, Y, and C, maybe.
Okay, okay. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to dive into this, like you said, without a boatload of analysis or more information, which we don't have.
I mean, there's just so much missing here.
And that kind of leads me to... Go ahead.
If you had the amount of goods traded and all of that, then you would have a better...
Yeah, that would be really interesting, wouldn't it?
A better picture for it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, here we could just look at it and be like, it's probably price manipulation. But that's just me knowing human nature and...
Understanding basic economics.
Not even that, just understanding human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it underscores what I thought the upshot was going to be coming out of this entire thing, that the economy is a complicated matter, and a lot of players who I have talked to claim to have the answers, but we really can't give these answers without having access to all that internal data of the trades that are processed, how many rares are changing hands, how many spirit shards are changing hands. We can guesstimate, of course, about inflation and whether or not it exists in GP or whether it's a wider economic problem. But the big question is about this whole Sudi business is if the rares are being manipulated. And I just need to underscore at the end of the day, the community should not take out its anger at those making what has become a valuable service.
Well, it's like getting mad at a calculator because you don't like what the arithmetic
was. Oh, I know plenty
of
people who got mad at calculators.
I mean, it's like, huh? I mean, go ahead.
And I don't know the full. I've seen some people who have blamed Sweetie for all of this. Even if they didn't handle it well, it's still not exactly their fault because there was one tool for this. There's one source of information, and of course that's going to be manipulated, and there's not really any way around that. I think it was bound to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much that they could have done to prevent it.
Yeah, and there's another one.
As much as people say, you could have just done this and it would be better.
No, this is an economy.
More complex like that.
This is an economy that they're monitoring, and they couldn't prevent any of this when you think about it. There's another one that tracks the rare items above max cash. ELY.GG. Is still in use. I don't know if they're experiencing a similar outrage over this, but I know a number of people that I talked to who are in that rare market did move their price checking and such over to ELY.GG for that. So,
you just, have one source of information, it's a little troubling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
well, and this is a good time to manipulate the market because there are other things. There are so many other things that they could try blaming on. I mean, one is that general sense that inflation's happened anyway, but then two,
and you have to wonder with that, maybe they perpetrated that idea that inflation was happening to hide what they were doing with the rare market, because to the run of the mill player, they're not going to see that as any different.
Yeah. And then they can also say, well, there's increased demand for rares because we got rid of the dual arena.
There's more money from PVM.
Well, but got rid of the dual arena. That's where the big players played. You can't gamble down there anymore, but you can gamble in the market. That's still perfectly acceptable. So, I mean, there's all kinds of smoke screens.
Yeah.
It's the perfect time.
Yeah.
If you're going to do it.
That's really interesting now that you mention it. From that angle.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Smoke and mirrors.
And, you know, you guys have both experienced Stowe, Reed, or Earth more than Tanis. Do you think we should have had a GE in RS that showed all the items that were listed and for the prices? Kind of like we have in Star Trek Online?
I think it'd be interesting.
Because for anybody unaware, in Star Trek Online, you can see each individual item that's listed and for the price.
But you only usually scroll a couple pages, right? I mean, that's all I do. I'm like, okay. I can't keep going.
I don't know how well it would work in RS, though, because you buy runes in bulk.
Yeah.
You're going to want, you know, 10,000 soul runes or something.
You're not going
to go through 50 offers and try to figure that out. I don't want to optimize it.
And that's really the strong point.
The difference between this and Stowe is you use the exchange for big one-off.
Yeah.
Purchases, yeah. There's not really consumable.
Whereas, like you said, buying 50,000 water runes on RS, you just put an order for that and they come in. Whereas with that, you need to click multiple times through pages to do that. So there would.
And I'm also interested. I've never quite understood how it works. If you put an offer in, if you offer to sell something for like 10,000 GP, and then someone else puts a buy offer in for 20,000. I feel like sometimes the seller gets 10, sometimes the seller gets 20, and I'm not really sure why. Is it whichever offer was in first, it goes to that price, or?
I have no idea. It's a good question. I've never understood it either.
I think if you put in, I think they would only give you the item if you put it in for, the lowest offer price or more. So if you put an offer for 10K, but there is nothing, cheaper than 20K, I don't think you'd get that item. I think you'd have to come up to 20.
That's not what I'm saying. So the sell price is static.
Sure.
At 10,000.
Okay.
But say you go in and you want to buy this keg of beer for 20,000 GP.
Right.
How much do you pay if the offer is already in there to sell it for 10K?
Oh, I see. I see.
And how much do you pay if you put that offer in and leave it and then someone else puts something in for 10K?
Right. Fair. Fair enough. I don't know. I don't know how that would work. You know, if there's ever going to be a Q&A on the economy, that would be a very good thing to ask. I know at the tail end of last year, Old School put in a grand exchange tax.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we'd have similar happening here, but apparently it did its job that it needed to.
Regressive tax. Tax the rares. Tax the rares.
Oh, God. There's people in this chat and in this podcast community that have rares that don't want to hear you say that, Tanis.
Well, because no rich person wants to hear that they should be taxed.
Taxation is theft.
Well, with that, I think we've exhausted I think we've exhausted most of the discussion that needed to happen on this, unless there's any anything else in particular.
Taxation is theft.
Tanis?
No.
All right.
I don't have anything.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, I'll just recap by closing it out the same way I started, is that it's never right for the community at large to take their anger out on somebody who's providing a community service when the bought people have absolutely nothing to do with what the prices were being sold at with that. So I just want to raise that as something that everybody should be thinking of as we head into this weekend, that it's never good to blame people who give their time and energy to the community for a game we all play just to, rake them over the coals for something that they have no control over. It's something I think that definitely warrants a wider discussion from Jagex's end. So,
yeah, just follow the golden rule. You know what that is, right, Shane?
What's that?
Don't be a dick. pretty sure I read that in a book somewhere.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. So before we wrap the show up, we have our next micro lesson, a micro lesson on smithing that you did, Tanis.
Yeah. It's just a quick little kind of basics of smithing and how you kind of want to think about it as a skill.
And optimize.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's dive in. In this micro-lesson, you'll learn about smithing in RuneScape. A micro-lesson is a short and to-the-point video that teaches you about RuneScape. This time, Tanis, co-host of RSBB Update, will be showing you how to smith efficiently for experience or profit.
Ever since the mining and smithing rework, smithing has fundamentally changed. This rework introduced heat and progress. You can click on a forge to heat up your item. Alternatively, you can use the superheat item spell to also heat up your item. Progress is made by hammering your heated item on an anvil. The more heat you have, the faster your progress is. Heat and progress are the fundamental building blocks of the smithing skill, and they work together. Another thing to remember while you're smithing is what equipment you are using. The most important piece of equipment you will use is your hammer, and the best hammer to use will be your crystal hammer. Also along with that is the blacksmith outfit. The smithing skill cape will also help increase your progress, so this is another item that you will want to be wearing while you're smithing. You may also want to use an auto heater. There are two forms of this available in Dungeoneering, a basic and an advanced. What this will do is use coal to automatically heat up your item for you, and it can be worn in the pocket slot. Another piece of equipment that you will want to be using is the Orthon Furnace Core. It is a smithing offhand, and it will help alleviate the drain of prayer points while using superheat form. More on that in a minute. Moving on to peripherals, here are some extras that can help you with your smithing. First up is the superheat form prayer. Now, this will help you keep your heat up, and it will drain your prayer points. There are also some extras that you may want to use while you're smithing. The first being the superheat form prayer. The superheat form prayer will increase your heat, which in turn will increase your progress. But unfortunately, it will drain your prayer points. You can use the Grace of the Elf to help slow down that drain, and you can use the Orthon Furnace Core to alleviate it altogether. There are some invention perks that you can add to your crystal hammer that will greatly benefit you while you're smithing. The first being Rapid 4 and Tinker 4. Both of these will increase your progress. Now, if you want to gain invention components, then feel free to substitute one of those out with Breakdown 6. More information about skilling perks can be found on our skilling perks micro lesson, which is linked in the description below. You can also try these additional peripherals: the Power Burst of Master Stroke, Varrok Armor 4, the Scroll of Efficiency, and Luminite Injectors. You can find out more about these in the RuneScape Wiki linked below. Lastly, let's talk about setting up for success. Now that you know the basics of smithing, you'll be able to make some tweaks around the edges to kind of set up yourself for profit or experience. Just keep in mind the fundamentals of the more heat, the more progress you make. If you are interested in high experience, then you will want to focus on burial armor. If you are looking towards profit, then focus on Elder Rune Plate Bodies. And Elder Rune Plate Bodies 3 are actually the most profit at this time, but of course, prices will fluctuate. Lastly, don't forget that you can start more than one smithing project at a time, filling up your inventory and making it much less click intensive. Now that you know the fundamentals of the smithing skill, and you can set up your gear for fun or profit, feel free to experiment and try different combinations of the items listed above so that you can gear your smithing to exactly what you want. If you found this micro lesson useful, then like and subscribe.
Thank you, Tanis. Thank you. I appreciate that. And did you enjoy making that one?
Yeah, I mean, it came pretty natural since that's what I've been
like
doing
it's been,
for yeah, a long time.
I feel like it's been a story of what you've been up to on RS for the last months at this point.
Uh-huh, yeah, and it's not going to be changing anytime soon. I just now got to the fun part of actually making the stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, because I guess
the mines, you know?
Because I guess everything would have been in the bars and the ore up until then, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, folks, let us know if you like that format. We kind of changed up the format for this one, went a little bit different, a little bit more static, a little bit more graphical on it. If you like that, let us know. Pop a like in the video, leave a comment, etc. Subscribe, all that other good fun stuff. But with that, I think we can move on to our picks of the week. Tanis, what do you got?
All right, so you know how like YouTube likes to decide what you should watch sometimes?
Sure.
So like everyone else on the planet, I followed some news of what's going on in the Ukraine. But I also watch a lot of like history, and you know, pretty big history buff and all that. So YouTube saw this and decided to throw something in my feed, and it actually was really good. And it's two videos. We have the link for one, but there is like an 8-part series that was probably on TV, but I found it on YouTube. So they're about 3 hours a piece. But it's called The Real History of the Russian Dynasty, episodes 1-4. And this is all about the Romanovs. And it's just really, it was something that I knew a little bit about, but didn't know a ton about. So it's kind of, you know, it was kind of cool to kind of find the history of, you know, of a place that is so in the
in
news,
the news
right, now.
Right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just really, I always find like monarchies and dynasties very intriguing and interesting stories, you know, and this is one that I didn't know all that much about. So I really enjoyed it. I actually think the 5-8 is probably the most interesting just because I find the last czar just fascinating, like how that went down and what happened and all of that. So but yeah, so it's called The Romanovs, The Real History of the Russian Dynasty.
Yeah, and when you start peeling back the layers about this, you know you go into the history of places like Russia and China and whatnot. Of course, everybody has the big idea in the head of what they represent today, but you go back into their own history and they have these very, very different and unique histories from what we have come to expect as the norm in Western society. And a lot of people don't go back before the start of the 20th century in Russia. If anything, they just touched briefly on you know, what the Tsarist regime was like and such, but they don't go back further than that. And I am a big proponent of looking at history to understand what's going on in the modern world and the context that it can provide on so many things, and whether or not you treat that history with the context of when it was made or if you look at it through a modern lens. So I can always appreciate these kind of historical documentaries on that front like that. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And once again, long YouTube video, but there's a difference between a YouTube video and a documentary, right? So
yeah, and like I said, this is like a very well produced. I'm guessing it was probably on TV at some time, but it's just kind of it was just really interesting to see that, like, you know, I mean, all throughout the Romanov dynasty, I mean, sometimes they were fighting against the Cossacks, sometimes the Cossacks were fighting with them as their elite cavalry, you know, sure, which is the area where Ukraine is. And it's fascinating to see that there is a very long history between these groups. Like, it's not all modern. it goes way back.
Yeah. All right. Earth, I believe you have a pick of the week for us. Dump into Spotify and get the Spotify link for that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure which link you wanted. So, surprise, surprise, it's an album. Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia. I saw her in concert about 2 months ago, and I have been hooked on this album ever since I heard it about 6 months ago. It's about all that I have been listening to. It's certainly one of my favorite albums of all time already.
Has it displaced your Taylor Swift?
I think Taylor might take number two on my Spotify Wrapped this year. And for those of you who know me, that is quite the statement.
All right.
All right.
Sounds good. I won't accidentally click the play on this, because if I do that, then this podcast might disappear from YouTube if I accidentally click play on Spotify here, if I start playing that through and let that into the audio of the show. So I won't do that.
So does that have
we'll
the
let
song
our listeners do it.
Does that have the song that, like, the remake of a couple Elton John songs?
No, but that's another phenomenal album. That is the Lockdown Sessions, which Elton John did a bunch of collaborations with a lot of artists, including Dua Lipa. And the song I was listening to it earlier that came out of it, my favorite one, is Cold Heart, and that's got Elton John and Dua Lipa. Cannot recommend it enough.
All right, sounds good. Not my cup of tea, but I appreciate that you like it.
Thanks, Shane.
My pick of the week is NASA's Eyes on Exoplanets, and this is important because, did you know that just recently we have actually crossed 5,000 plus confirmed planets covering 3,764 solar systems?
I did not.
Yeah, I heard something about that.
And we've only scanned a small portion of the galaxy that's relatively close to us. So with that, there's a lot of exploring to be done. And if we have found 5,000 planets plus relatively close, there's a whole lot more out there, and this is a website that catalogs them. What it does is basically you can just click on any star around and you'll be able to see what is orbiting that star. So you click to zoom on one and it'll show you what has been detected there. And this random one that I clicked on, we've only detected one planet orbiting the star. That's called HD 12648, and it's 594 light years away from Earth. But it actually has some really interesting aspects to it as well, including their featured planets, such as Kepler-22b, which was talked about a lot as being perhaps one of the first super-Earths that have been discovered. They also have the so-called weirdest planets, which is one of the ones, the first ones that you go to, is Kepler-70b, which is a molten rock world, 4,000 light-years from Earth. And the reason it's a molten rock world is because it sits so close to its sun that its entire surface is molten rock. There's also different plasma, or sorry, different planet types. You can search based on which were discovered by Kepler, which were discovered by TESS, which were discovered by various detection methods. But I think one of my favorite ones is the weirdest planets filter, and that's where I found that molten rock planet. And it does this really, really interesting visualization where it zooms in all the way out to the planet and then the solar system and then the star. And then if you go out all the way further, you'll actually be able to see where that sits in relation to our planetary system, to just kind of give you an idea of how large the field is of where everything has been discovered. And of course, when the first exoplanets were found in the 1990s, that was a shock to everybody. And when they were first found, people thought that they were just aberrations and such. But at 5,000 plus cataloged planets, we've actually started to discover rocky planets, which lends the possibility of finding a world in orbiting a star's habitable zone, which could potentially lead to the existence of water, which, as we know on Earth, life as we see it requires water to live. But that just is scratching the surface of everything that's been found here. And it's just a really interesting visualization when you look through all this. So that can be found at exoplanets.nasa.gov/eyes-on-exoplanets. But links to this, Earth's Dua Lipa pic, and Tanis's Russian documentary will be found in the show notes at update.rsvmb.com. So I would highly recommend everybody give this a look, because when you zoom out, you can actually just see that we've only searched a small corner of the galaxy, believe it or not. So, and that's just interesting seeing how small we actually are. So I was enjoying doing that.
Let's jump in the sleeper ship, Shane. It's time. Let's go.
Well, I mean, based on this, it looks like we've actually discovered a planet that's upwards of 25,000 plus light years away when you zoom out on it. So that's pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the farthest one, 27,000 light years away. And just
okay,
to put
so
that
we're
in,
gonna need some Borg transwarp to cover that distance.
Yeah, and just to put that in perspective, for that, the way light works is that one light year equals the distance that light would take to get to us. So the light we're seeing from those planets, 27,000 light years away, was emitted 27,000 years ago. Just a bit of food for thought as we head into our achievements of the week. So, Tanis, what do you got for us?
All right, starting off, we have Lore Deluxe with 99 Invention on April 20th. We have Battle Slash X with 99 Slayer on April 19th. And we have Jacker with 120 Runecrafting on April 19th. And we have Torag Ray. What did you say this was?
Torgry.
Torgry. Okay. Torgry got 99 Archaeology on April 19th.
Nicely done. We also have FE Super J with 120 Slayer on the 18th. Raven Rain with 120 Slayer on the 16th. And also on the 16th, we have Raven Rain again with 120 Dungeoneering. Acronia got 120 Fishing on the 15th. And Aliosith got 99 Archaeology on the 14th. Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. I don't know if I need to ask you what you've been doing on RS, Tanis, but if it's anything else other than smithing for the micro lesson, anything?
Yeah, I mean, finished Jack Track.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Didn't do anything different than what I was doing anyway. But I got all the stuff, so that's kind of cool. I mean, my feeling is still the same. But
how do you feel finishing it?
I feel selfish because I liked it myself, but I still have that I have that feeling of like, I don't know if this is how it's supposed to be, but I like it, so I hope it keeps going because it was good for me.
Well, and I mean, Earth, you said you finished it as well, so obviously this is something they should keep then.
Yeah, I mean, with that. That's neat.
Yeah.
It didn't change what I had to do, and I appreciated that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if it changed what I had to do, I wasn't going to do it.
Yep. Yeah. Tanis, anything else?
No, I mean, that's literally been about it.
All right, Earth.
Been doing a lot of PVM lately. And most notably, the other day, I was doing a Chaos Elemental Reaper task.
Oh, right.
And I got a Statius?
I always say Statius.
Statius?
That's what I say.
Statius Warhammer drop from the Chaos Elemental, which is a drop rate of 1 out of 28,800. and it is worth 225 mil. So I got that and I logged off.
Uh-huh.
Because that broadcast minutes, to the wilderness.
Uh-huh. Yeah, someone in clan chat said, Earth, pick that up and run. But apparently, the people went to the Revenants, which has kind of a higher drop rate than the Chaos Elemental.
And people say I'm the one that has the PVM luck.
Well, apparently not. Other than that, just farming runs, Slayer.
Yeah, we had a fun talk about Slayer the other night.
Yeah, Shane's wrong, as usual.
Yeah. Yeah, still not a fan of Slayer, but hey.
Well, that's your own damn fault for using all of your points to cancel tasks until...
I did that once.
You get the same thing.
I did that once.
You've canceled one task.
No. I've canceled multiple, but I don't. I only used all my points once. But never mind. Anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, hold on. You used all of your points.
Well, enough that I couldn't buy anything big. I took it down to under 300.
How many did you spend?
All of them.
Like 100-ish.
That's just 3.
Yeah.
But you don't like Slayer because you keep doing the same tasks over and over because you keep canceling the ones you don't like.
No, I just do Slayer sporadically enough that I'm going to do a task, I'll use a mask, and I'll get to pick what it is. Anyway.
And you still don't have any of the upgrades.
I do.
Do you have... Do you have the Bone Crusher on your belt?
No.
Do you have the Seedicide on your belt?
No.
Herbicide?
No.
What the? Do you have the fully upgraded Slayer helmet?
One away from that.
Ugh. Do you have the Finishing Blows thing?
Yes. I bought that in like 2005.
Do you have the Charming Imp?
Yes, I have the Charming Imp.
On your tool belt.
No, I don't have it on my tool
belt. Oh, Shane! I had no idea you were playing with, like, a half of a
brain
deck.
What?
No wonder you hate the same thing.
So that's your own fault.
Hey, I got 120, and that's good enough for me.
That's like getting 120 from, like...
Livid Farm.
Yeah, salmon or something, right? Trout and salmon. I'm just hanging down.
No, I got 120 from dummies.
You are a dummy. And honestly, did you really just hand that to me?
No, I didn't expect it.
You didn't expect me to call you a dummy?
No.
You have known me for 12 years.
More than that.
That was the least surprising thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, you teed that up for me.
Water's wet, too. Newsflash.
Lord.
Anyways, anything else before I say what I've been doing?
Dummy.
I have been farming on the alt. I have been doing the spring event, gambling on the mystery eggs. No, I didn't get anything good with them. But aside from that, just doing some raids here and there whenever I'm off loot. Reaper task a few times this week. And there was something else. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Now that I've done the desert task set, the extra sandstone and sophonym, making an extra effort to get out there daily for that. That's very good and fun. So that's what I've been up to on RS, and much like you, it's evolved more towards a PVM sense on that. And I'm interested to figure out what kind of discussion we'll be having next week, Tanis, because that's when we get the upgraded rewards for Extinction.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually been going there whenever I have the to Aya. I've been going there to build the skilling spots with the ports resources and just kind of cycling through them, because you know each one requires 50,000 to build, and you have to kind of let the coffers rebuild after that. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't even have my completely upgraded and done and all that anyway. So,
okay,
I mean, and not to mention that I've just been going there when I want to die. I'm feeling like there's no use anymore.
Oh, right, the boss fight.
Yeah. So.
And I won't ask Earth what he thinks about Aya, since that involves going to Anachronia.
You know, I'm actually there right now, but I hate Anachronia. They need to reduce its size by about like 20-30%.
I think that boat sailed.
Yeah. Well, that's what they need to do to fix it.
Well, for me personally,
because I am the most important person to ever exist ever, and everyone should, do as I say, right?
Right. And with that, I think we can wrap this episode of RSP&B Update up, Tanis.
Yep, we're good here.
We are good. So if you want this podcast delivered automatically to you, which is the best way to get it, since you won't miss an episode then if you do that. If you subscribe on any of the platforms out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB, where we post our micro lessons and nibbles throughout the entire week. If you like those, if you like the podcast there, do give us a like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.